Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Leslie Wood is a UK-based mixed media artist who's picked up several awards recently for her hand-embroidered and mixed media pieces. This is the second part of our needle exchange, and in this we do some deep dives into specific pieces of her work, including a piece recently called Inside Out, which has the nerve to show the front and the back of the work on the front of the work and really challenge that concept. And we talk about the piece that she created that won the Hand and Lock Prize. And as always, in the second part of our interview, we also dive into some of Leslie's personal preferences in terms of music and listening and things to watch. And we come up with a pretty kick-ass interesting fact that no one knows about Leslie. I've really enjoyed getting to know Leslie. I really enjoy her work. I think she's got a really creative approach. And, you know, the amount of success that she's had in a relatively short space of time putting herself out there as a stitcher is testament to her creativity. So I think you'll enjoy this show. If you haven't listened to the first part that came out last week, go and find that. And if this kind of work floats your boat, then be sure to check out the conversations I've had with Sally Wilson, who's very mixed media, and Jane Sanders as well, who's someone that Leslie has got to know over the years as well. As always, it's a pleasure being here. I hope you enjoy the show. Do feel free to leave a review on your favourite podcasting platform if you'd be so kind, as that will definitely help give people confidence in finding out what's going on here. I absolutely love doing the show. It's a real pleasure to be in your ears. So thank you for your time. I'll be back next week with another artist. Until then, enjoy the show. Because as you said, like, a lot of your work involves layers. And the other thing I observe, and the thing that I really like as well, is that you enjoy a bit of negative space.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Definitely. I've just done a piece called Inside Out.
Yes, you have. I've got that down to talk to. Let's talk about that. Can I just ask, did you literally... So, Inside Out, go and look at it on Instagram. It's a person of two halves. One half is stitches you might expect, and the other half is the reverse of the work. Did you reverse it and stitch it properly on the other side and then do that, or is that a trade secret?
Right. No, it's not a trade secret. I mean, I'm always interested in seeing what it looks like on the back. And I think a lot of people have said this. There is an artist and she's fabulous and she does the backgrounds. She shows the back of the portrait and they're just amazing. But because I'm not embroidery chained, I've got knots and all sorts. I don't think, is it sitting girls? They don't do knots, yeah. Apparently, but I do knots. I'm not an embroiderer. I'm a stitcher, really. But always fascinated by that. And I'm a bit of a fool when it comes to the Royal Academy Summer Show. I thought, am I going to bother this year? And then I saw I don't even know her name. It's some sculptor, and she's talking about space and negative space. And as you say, I do like a bit of negative space in my work. I thought, oh, this might be the opportunity, the inside out thing, because I'm forever putting jumpers on that are not the right way. We can then discover them. So I put my husband I put one of his T-shirts on and got him to photograph me. And then I split it in half, and I decided to have a T-shirt with inside out written on it. And I stitched the right side first, and then I turned it and started doing almost again on the back. But funny enough, when I put it round the right way, the wrong side didn't work so well. So I sort of cheated a bit. Work from the front as well on the wrong side. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so it does.
It's just sparked an idea that I've been thinking about doing some work that included the reverse side of things. And then when that came about, that's why I've done that piece. And I've submitted it, but I have low expectations. It's a bit like this. I think it's a bit like the lottery in the fact that unless you buy your ticket, you're not going to win. So you put in thinking, well, don't miss. And it's still irritating that they don't have the textile section. And I don't know if you know this, that they don't have a textile section. So I've submitted it into mixed media.
Right. Yeah. Right?
Because it's stitch and paint on fabric. I was on the internet and there's a girl who does some, that's an embroiderer, she does black work, which is amazing. And she's been in the Royal Academy. I won't give her a name because I don't think that's fair. But she's been in the Royal Academy Summer Show a couple of times. And apparently she used to put it in the mixed media section. And had no luck. And the last couple of times that she's put in and got through, she put it in drawing.
Oh,
which I thought was pretty interesting. But I can't change my application now. So I'm thinking, perhaps next time I'll try putting it in. I don't know how it works. I don't know whether the people that are sitting by the computer looking at thousands and thousands of images, whether they sort of split themselves into different categories and just look at the mixed media stuff. I don't know.
It's weird, isn't it? It's a weird hack to have to try and do that, to try and game the system, when you would hope that just the work in and of itself and the visual impact of it is the thing that delivers.
But it kind of worries you. You think, well, if they just put textiles there, and then you just hang it in there, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, I would.
There was a conversation I had recently about the National Portrait Gallery as well, and when they're doing submissions, it has to be paint in North, you know? You're like, okay, thanks. Yeah. I'll start the National Textile Portrait Gallery in that case then. I thought Inside Out was amazing. It's such a good piece.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll see what happens to it. I mean, I'd love to be in that. I mean, just the idea of going to the varnishing day and stuff like that would be... really bit silly, really, but there you go.
But I mean, you've done pretty well. I mean, I don't know how much the awards count for you. I guess everybody needs a bit of external validation, don't they? But let's face it, you've won the Hand and Lock Award, you've got the Oh, their names just escaped me. The Margaret
Madeira thing.
Yeah, the Madeira thing for a lovely... I really like that piece as well. So, I mean, you're hitting all the big wins already. Should we talk about the hand and lock piece? Because that was another beautiful... I love the negative space on that and the kind of illustrative nature. And then also, was there a bit of digital stuff going on in the background of that as well?
Yeah, I've got photographs printed on sheer fabrics from Kansas. Yeah, well, Organdy, whatever. Mm. Anyway, sheer fabrics. I didn't realise it was such a big thing, actually. I'm in contract with Nigel Cheney, if you know mm-hmm. Nigel.
Yeah.
It's lovely. And I think he mentioned hand and lock, and I thought, oh, I don't know about Johnny Mac. And then I looked at the brief that year, which was to do with, I think it was doppelgangers. Yeah. And so the piece that I produced is called Digital Shadows of Self.
Mm.
Now, I've been on family history, and I started looking at the photographs that I've got of my ancestors. And when you look at these pictures, you start looking at, oh, does that look like such and such? And, oh, I wonder what they did. And you find out the background of these people and you make comparisons with your own life, whether they've got the same shaped nose or they do a similar job as yourself. And so that's really what spurred me on, because I'm really interested in family history. And to do that, you go on the internet nowadays. You don't go down to some archive and ferret it out there. Well, you can do, and I have done, but you get it on the internet. So that was the digital bit. Mm. And then I discovered a lot of my ancestors are makers. I come from Northampton, so everybody there, near enough everybody, involved in working with leather.
Yeah.
And also I discovered that others were involved in the lace industry, which mm-hmm. It was an awful place, but it died out once there was the Industrial Revolution. But so there was lace makers, and my grandfather and his father before and whatnot were blacksmiths, so working with metal. So there's a lot of sort of this sort of thing going on. So that's why I went the shadows of myself, really. And I left it quite blank, my body. I did my face and my hands.
Mm, beautiful.
But I left the body quite blank because I still don't know enough about myself or my relatives. So I thought it appropriate. And I also had a sort of faint red line, blood line going through the whole thing. Mm.
Yeah, almost like a map. But I felt there was a bit of topography in it.
Yeah, I mean, I from an old computer keyboard, which I smashed up and used some of the keys on there to stick on there as well. So it was quite personal. And I went along to the, I was amazed that I got through, went to the exhibition, which was amazing, and thought, well, I'm pretty pleased to be here.
I'll keep my coat on, though. This won't take long.
Yeah. So I was actually gobsmacked when they said that I'd won. But, it was lovely because it was a personal thing. And I didn't think I'd tried hard with it. It just came out naturally.
Mm.
And that's the thing about ideas. I mean, when you work at something and it just goes dead, whereas sometimes, as you said, with Ronnie Wooden getting inspired or whatever, it just seems to goes. And the same with finishing work, I think. It feels right. Until it feels right, you keep going, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah. I really love the piece because it's a picture of you stitching. It's just a really powerful storytelling moment, because it's almost like you're stitching yourself kind of, and it's just like it really sums you up. I found it a really fascinating distillation.
I was very pleased with that. I don't know if I'll be another one quite the same, but And that's it. I know you're one of the judges this year.
I was a judge last year as well. I was a judge for 23, and they've invited me back for 24. So I obviously must have done something right or something. But no, and I love it. I think, I mean, for me, the thing is always, it's like you can take the quality of the work almost as a given because it's all really high. And when it's all really high, you have to go, okay, what's that thing? You know, the thing that excites me, I think, are those the things that I look out for.
Yeah.
And like I say, with that piece as well, because I love comic book art and stuff like that, like just the use of line and the use of space and those kind of things. Like I really like that piece. And I think there's a couple of instances with your work, I think sometimes where like a story is just told. I think, as you said, you know, you offer up a scene for people to like tell their own story. But I was very struck by what's it called? Liminal Spaces. The virtual vistas that you did, which is kind of an echo of a piece of work that you did previously, but then very much part of that kind of lockdown reflection series. And I just was struck by that story that you were saying with that one as well.
Yeah, because we couldn't go out, we couldn't walk very far, really. In fact, my husband and I went up to Edmonton and Richmond, and we were stopped by the police. Yeah, it was just early on in the march. You know, we just thought, well, we'll not see anybody out on the hills. But because I really much,
everybody was heading for the hills, and they were just all doing the same thing as police pushing.
I mean, we weren't doing. I mean, it was just me and the husband. So it was. You started looking at pictures of landscapes on the computer, and that's really. And I have to put North Yorkshire in there because I really like North Yorkshire.
And the way that it's sort of, it's quite a sort of blurry image. And then you've just used, I mean, a lot of your stitching is just kind of satin stitch, isn't it? It's just lots and lots of straight lines.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do complicated stuff. most of it is satin stitch, running stitch, back stitch, a few French knots occasionally.
And then when you're doing the figurative pieces, again, the stitches are uncomplicated, but it's the choice of colour that is the thing that delivers like the depth and the texture. Is that, I mean, do you feel that out as you're going along, or do you sort of have a palette of colours? You go, right, these are my 25 colours I'm going to use in this instance.
I start off with a palette and then I start rummaging around that it's not quite right, so I have to start looking for other colours. My problem being that most of my threads are secondhand. I put them through charity shops or whatever. Often they don't have numbers on them. And so when they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah.
Trying to imagine is just hell. So, yeah, I have a certain amount. And I think to myself, well, if I can't do it with this amount, So I do have a number of sort of fleshy colours, and then I go from that. But it's down to, it's like painting. I'm painting with thread, as a lot of people do. And because I was a painter, and because I've done quite a few figures, painted lots of figures, then it's actually better for me, because I used to, and I'd be so impatient with my colour mixing of paint, I would just put it on the canvas and then try and mix it while it was on the canvas, and it didn't kind of work so well. Whereas because it's thread or fabric, I've got the colour that I can't change it unless I go over the top of it or blend it in some way, like, I mean, do strands of thread, but that doesn't always work. So in a way it's a gift for me because the colours are already there. I haven't really got to, and it's just the way I layer it or whatever.
Do you think that the art teaching background and stuff gives you this sort of, I'm not going to say, it feels like nonchalance, but, you know, I think you just do the work and you make the work, and the technicalities of it are somewhat secondary because you go, I know I can do this work and I will feel it out, find it out, it'll get done, come hell or high water kind of thing.
And also I haven't had that City and Guilds training. So if I'm doing something wrong, I'm doing something wrong. I wouldn't even know if I'm doing anything wrong. No. But when I go to little stitch groups and things and sit next to people, it's really interesting. They are so good with the thread and the and yet so nervous about trying out their own ideas. And I just think, God, if I could stitch like that, I could do amazing stuff. But they just, yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it's unseen. You've just got all these creative people who are, like you say, they're like stitching pieces of metal into things, or they're getting the soldering iron out and burning loads of holes in things and then stitching over the top. And they're all just, and it's such a creative pool, even across the whole of the guild. But it's a sort of thing that, I mean, I feel like it's a little bit at risk because I don't think young people engage with the Embroiderers Guild in the way that the guild probably needs them to. But like you say, they don't necessarily put themselves out much further than like local shows a lot of the time. And yet,
I know.
Oh boy, they did. I was going to ask you about the, because you got an Embroiderers Guild award, the Margaret Nicholson Award, which was the Margaret I was trying to remember before, for Stash Joy as well. Again, just another like total bundle of fun there. I don't know whether you'd just like to tell me about that.
The theme was layers. And I do like my magpies.
Mm.
I've got a lot of them. I've got some large trees out the back here, and there's quite a few magpies. It's fascinating to watch them. So I really got into doing magpies, to be quite honest. I'm a little bit tired of them now. but, you know, they are popular as well. But I did a piece called Dodging the Stash. And I'll not sell it because I really like that piece of work. It's so good that you do a piece of work and you think, oh, that's worked really well. I'm really pleased with how that's turned out. And so I wouldn't sell it.
Mm.
But there's a lot of people who have asked, is it for sale? No. So when they said layers for this, I thought, well, actually, I could do another one similar to Guarding the Stash. And that's where I started from, and thought, I'll do a few flying magpies with apparently their stash, and then all the... Because people say, oh, I'm a magpie, I collect all this stuff, especially people who are into textiles. They're always going on about their stash and how much they've got or how they're trying to get rid of it. And it's just so magpie-like. So, yeah. So there is a nice connection there between magpies and textiles. So, yeah. And I just use bits of fabric I use. I often dye things with tea.
Right.
And I do like quink. I love quink.
Because the tone of it, you've got kind of golds and blues and greys. It's like tonally, it's very similar, which seems to be a bit of a neat trick in terms of, because it's also, there's a bit of alchemy in there, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, I think my colour palette does tend to be sort of bluey golds and things quite often.
It's very classy.
Yeah. Well, that was another thing with the Inside Out, choosing a very hot pink as the background. I just thought, that will be different for a change, you know. So,
do you know what that is? That's a bit of Jane Sanders coming through. That is, she's a killer on the backgrounds.
Maybe. Old Hilbert's really good. Have you seen it in the?
I haven't seen it for real. No, it's super annoying. But I mean, I've been a fan of hers for eons.
The glass eyes are like, ooh.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I remember going to, God, it was one of the first knitting and stitching shows I went to. So it'd be like 2009, 2010, something like that. And there was a charity who'd set something up that to me was pure genius, where they had like three bookcases. And in the bookcases, there were jars, and the jars were filled with buttons of different colours and little bits and bobs like that. And if you donated a pound, you could sit there for 10 minutes and just sort them out. And it all day, they just had people, and not wishing to sound sexist, but it was always the women who would just be sat down at the table having the blast, just going through the little bobbins and looking at all the little buttons and stuff like that.
They made
a killing. Yeah. I was like, that's such a magpie thing. It's so funny. You just have like bewildered husbands standing there going, right, I've been here for like 10 minutes. Sharon, love.
the button boxes are really... I think most women had a button box. I mean, my family, I know a lot of textile artists go on about having great seamstresses in their family and stuff, but my family, I've mentioned my mum before, but sewing was really something you did as a chore. It was repairing things. It wasn't making things, and certainly not pictures that got no use of them at all. So I grew up with I did start making clothes when I was a bit older, but I didn't have that influence from my family. It was very utility type sewing to work for. Yeah.
So your creativity is purely like your spirit pouring out. Because I mean, let's face it, it's pouring. It is pouring. It's fantastic to watch. Did you get
leaking?
My creativity is leaking. That's not. Yes, that's a good way of putting it. I'll use that as a title for the podcast. Leaking creativity. Do you have? There's no wrong answer here, by the way. I'm being very gentle. Do you have a favorite band / album?
Oh dear, I'm not a great listener to music. I don't listen to music while I'm working. I more or less use podcasts. But anyway,
right.
I try to think what music do I or have listened to a lot. I mean, in the past, I used to listen to things like Steely Dan.
Love Steely Dan.
Fleetwood Mac, but that's I would say now I quite like Americana music. So one of my favourite albums at the moment is by a band called The Wandering Hearts called Wild Silence.
Okay.
Do listen to that. That's great. Mavericks, quite good. And also I would say Traveling Wilburys collection with all the super group.
That was a super group, wasn't it? I don't think I was too young to realise, but upon reflection, you're like, hang on, Roy Orbison and George Harrison. You're just like, what is going on?
And Tom Petty. Bob Dylan. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And the book from the yellow, can't remember his
Jeff
name.
Lynn.
Jeff. Yeah.
I love a bit of Steely Dan. I've got a Steely Dan CD in the car. I'm always singing it to the girls. They get very annoyed.
Can't buy a thrill. It's the one of all the famous bits on. Yeah.
And so like Michael McDonald on backing vocals as well, before he got sort of renowned for himself and stuff.
Yeah. Boys. So, that's really.
But you're more of a podcast person then?
Well, I like listening to podcasts.
So other than Needle Exchange, do you have a favourite podcast?
I listen to Arc Juice.
Mm-hmm.
And I also Off the Menu. And
is that the one with is it James Acaster? Is it that one?
That's the one. So they're quite funny. And then there's another one from Brett Jenner as a comedian on with a historian. He's the one that did the Horrible Histories.
Right.
He does.
Okay.
Yeah. And you want to take to me? Something like that.
Right.
I think it's called. Yeah. Art Talk with Toby in it. Russell Toby.
Oh, the actor. Yeah. He's a big art buff, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. They do one called Art Talk or something.
Right.
But it's quite contemporary and they talk about artists that I haven't heard of. So, yeah.
They're always good for dropping it. You try and remember those names and then just drop them in every now and then. It's like when if I have to talk about football, I'm a bit out of touch now, so I can't even talk about Mourinho because he's not even there. But, like, literally, I just have a couple of names I stick in the back there.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy it. Have you listened to The Rest Is Entertainment yet?
No, I've listened to The Rest Is Politics.
Rest Is Politics is good. I find I get annoyed by it because I get annoyed by politics. The Rest Is Entertainment is as good, but it's about TV and films. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, they've got one, The Rest Is History as well. There's a lot of The Rest Is. So The Rest Is Entertainment. So I think just that one.
So that's Richard Osman, who is an author, a TV game show person, and a TV producer. And then Marina Hyde, who writes for The Guardian, but also writes TV shows. And has got a lot of behind the scenes experience. So it's that a bit like with The Rest Is Politics, you know, it's that good combination of people who've got a real breadth of experience. Because like Richard Osman, you know, he is a best-selling author, but then he also used to work for like Endemol, so helped produce like Big Brother back in the day and stuff. So he's just got loads of like, and their question and answer show is really interesting because people just ask them all those kind of, you know, like they were talking the other day about if a game show host is poorly, on something like Pointless, if like Alexandra Armstrong's got a cold, it feels like he's had a cold for like 4 months because they record like 20 episodes a day and he's had a cold for like 3 days, but it goes on forever. And those kind of insights, it just makes you smile. You know, I think that's what I value in podcasts these days, is it makes you smile.
Marina Hyde has done a book because my husband's read it and I said, oh, I'll have to read it after you. And that's really funny. She's really funny. Yeah.
And she is. They're a good balance, you know, in the same way that Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart are a good. Like, I really love the Rest Is Politics. Like I say, I just get a bit annoyed by the stuff they have to talk about because it's just a bit.
Yeah, it gets nowhere, really.
So, that said then, good books. What was the last? Do you have a favourite book, favourite author?
Right. I'll tell you now that I don't really read novels. I read non-fiction books. Mm-hmm. I cannot read. Yeah. So any books like Claire Tomlin or Antonia Fraser, Claire Hunter with the textile-y thing.
Is that the threads of, what's it called?
Yeah, Embroidering Her Truth and Threads of Life.
Threads of Life I've got on my bedside cabinet. I'm getting ready to read that.
Yeah. So I'm always interested in that sort of history kind of real stuff. At the moment, and I'll mention this one because I read it a long time ago and I saw it in a bookshop again. And thought, I think I bought it from the library before. So I bought it again and I'm reading it now. And it's called Wedlock by Wendy Moore. And it's about Mary Ellen Bowes, who was from Gibside in the 18th century. And it's a really good read. And it gives you an awful lot of detail about life in the Northeast during that period and how a woman is tricked into marriage and is abused awfully. So it's really interesting. So I'd always recommend that as a biography. So Wendy Moore, Wedlock, it's got how Georgian Britain's worst husband met his match. So, and it's really easy to read and it's really fun and interesting. It starts off with a duel.
Oh, excellent.
Between two blokes.
Good open loop.
Really good
very
read. Good.
Very nice, very nice. And then do you have a TV/film option here? Have you got any good telly, any good films?
I shut that down sometimes because I thought, oh, I'll have to resign to this.
He's always like, I can talk about like what it's like to push past creative boundaries and people can blether on about that for hours. I go, what was the last good film you watched? People are like, I spent days thinking about this.
I quite like Cold Mountain. I don't know if you know that. It's got good music in. I like films with good music in. And it's got Alison Krauss and Jack White.
Okay, is that like Nicole Kidman, Jude Law, Renée Zellweger?
Yeah, that's it. That's right. The one. Mm. Yeah. So that would be.
That's a very attractive combination of actors, that is, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was, I don't know why I like that. The other one I would say I watched so many times with my kids when they were growing up was A Scene in the Rain.
Mm.
So it just has lots of good dancing music and stuff. And it's really nice watching your kids watch something that they enjoy and then you end up seeing it so many times. It's ridiculous. I think they could probably tell you the script. The same as Friends when they were growing up, teenage girls listening to Friends. And now they still, come out with quotes. It's just an oh God.
We're going through a similar thing at the moment now that Gladiators has started back on the telly because it's literally like the one thing that me and my wife and the girls all sit down and watch with the same gay abandon that I did when I was a kid. Because it's that, and there's a magic in that, it's like the magic of Strictly as well. I really like those kind of pure things that just give you a bit of joy because you can sit down with them together. That's great.
Right. Yeah,
we binge watched Friends not that long ago, me and my wife, and there's a series, God bless Matthew Perry, rest in peace, and all of that, but there's a gap between two series, maybe it's series 3 and series 4, where he loses a ton of weight for various reasons, and because we watched like that episode and then the new series immediately afterwards, we were just like, whoa. All of a sudden he's really skinny. It was very bizarre.
I did think the last series was a bit oof. It was much better early on than it just went a bit.
There's
bit
some dark moments in it that are great, and then there's a few like doldrum series that you have to get through as well on it. But
It
holds up fairly well. Wow. Well. Yeah. And then what is one interesting fact that not a lot of people know about Leslie Wood?
Oh dear, that's really difficult because you're asking for a secret.
Or you can just make something up and I'd be none the wiser.
I would tell you something that probably people don't know about me. When I was in my youth, my teens, up until I was 18, I did judo and I was a brown belt. And I was on the way to getting my black belt. My brother had a black belt and so did some of my friends. And I got quite there because I went to college and I gave it up. But I was into judo as a young person.
Do you still have that fundamental surety that if someone was to approach you, you could flip them onto the floor with ease?
No. hopefully my legs would carry me quick enough away. it was never staff defence as such. It's a sport, it has rules, so you know, it's not really, although I would say you had contact with another human being, you wouldn't be quite so shocked, maybe. I don't know.
I'd imagine there's just an inner confidence. I always liked, I mean, I never did any martial arts. I have to rely on the fact I'm quite hard to push over. Whereas with my kids, I sort of want that. I wouldn't mind them being sure, you know, that they can sort of look after themselves.
I think it gives you confidence, yes. And you learn how to roll and, you know, fall properly and stuff like that. But it is a competitive thing. And actually, I enjoyed it. That's the point. Yeah.
And when you get up to those higher levels as well, some of it's about overcoming your own barriers, isn't it? Like pushing beyond yourself.
Yeah, I had to train a lot and stuff, but any year for competitions and things, because I was in Northampton, but I used to train with these Midland spots, so I had to go up to Leicester quite a lot and things like that. So I travelled around quite a bit with it. It was fun at the time, and then I went to college, and when I was at Loughborough, there was a lot of PE students around, and I remember going to a judo session, and I thought, oh, I'm not going there, because they had all this macho idea of things. So, I did bother.
I thought you were going to say, so I went and just wiped the floor with them and then walked off again.
Well, they thought they were something else.
Oh, bless.
But that's
a good one. I like that one. I don't think that was a particularly bad thing. Okay. I think people...
That's all I could think of.
You'll not see people approaching you from behind in a hurry, I think, just to be on the safe side now.
Yeah, I don't know you to... In fact, no, I mean, it's a long time ago. I'd never be able to do anything like that now. Jeez. Yeah.
Well, listen, Leslie, thanks for having a needle exchange with me.
Well, thank you. It's been fun.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NWDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle exchange. See you next time.